Borough Hounds Mayor Council Meeting, October 7th, 2009.
Seafood, Trustee Bridge.
Well, I think we can close for this.
As per requirement of Public Law 1975, Chapter 231, notice is hereby given that this is a workshop meeting with special action of the Mayor and Council of the Borough of Hounds. No requirements have been met. Notice has been transmitted to the Asbury Park Press, the Two River Times. Notice has been posted on the board.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Francie?
Okay. Yes.
Ms. Gabe?
Here.
Mr. Kiazza?
Here.
Here. Mayor Lowe.
Here.
Executive session resolution. Be resolved that the following portion of this meeting dealing with the following generally described matter shall not be open to the public. Under litigation, we have the Atlantic Crown Grounds Regional Sewing Authority. Under real estate, Dan Rock Property Lease. Under personnel matters, employment positions, administrative staff, and recycling attendant. Be it further resolved that it is anticipated that the matters to be considered in private may be disclosed to the public at a later date when the need for privacy no longer exists, and be it further resolved that no portion of this meeting shall be electronically recorded unless otherwise stated. Be it further resolved that the private consideration is deemed required and is permitted because of the following noted exceptions set forth in the Act 45910. Would you like to offer that?
Is there anyone here that would like to offer?
Yeah, I'll offer.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I'll show you how to
score.
I heard I was a little human last
night.
No.
I just want to make sure before we start the meeting that those of you who may have not have attended frequently, that there is a sign-up list for public portion. We do encourage everyone who wants to speak to take an opportunity to speak. Whatever the topic is, whether it's on the agenda or not, it doesn't look like we have a big crowd, so we may not have to limit you to the 5 minutes. We only do that when we think it's going to go on for hours. But please feel free to come forward and sign if you have not done so. Okay. With that, I will call the meeting to order. Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Francie?
Here.
Ms. Kane here. Mr. Kiazza?
Here.
Mr. Vance?
Here.
Mayor Lowe?
Here. First item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Is there any request by anyone at the table to remove an item from the consent agenda at this time?
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead, John. From the payment of bills, check number 430635, I'm sure it's been paid already, but I check for that being paid.
Did you want to remove the item from the agenda, the consent agenda, or did you just want to make your statement for the record?
I'd like to remove it but I don't know if that's possible.
No, sorry, what page is it on?
I know exactly.
Page one.
Okay, well, it's been paid. It's been paid.
It's been paid.
And cash.
Okay. Very well.
Is there anything else, Mr. Francie?
No, just to pull it. Pull that item.
Okay. So that would leave items number 2 and 3 on the consent agenda. Is there a motion at this time?
I'll move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion at the table on items 2 and 3 on the consent agenda? Okay, then roll call, please.
Mr. Francie?
Yes.
Ms. Gaines?
Yeah.
Mr. Kiazza?
Yeah.
Mr.
Vansky?
Yes.
Mayor Lowe?
Yes. That would leave item number 1, which has been removed from the consent agenda. Would you gentlemen care to propose action with regard to that item?
Well,
or discuss it, or whatever
I'd like to discuss it. I'm in receipt of the letter that from Navison Capital Partners that sent back. I have a real issue with the second line here, which says, we will agree to make payment in order to avoid a protracted legal argument regarding the complexities surrounding Mr. Hartsworth's tenancy. And that seems pretty clear to me that there's a problem here that wasn't ours. It seems to be his problem. And I don't think we should have taken this route to begin with because I believe it was a problem that was ongoing for quite a while, which somehow became our problem. And I don't think there was enough action taken to correct this problem at the time or for the future. I believe that it probably still goes on, and if you went down there tomorrow, you could find the same problem with different units, and it hasn't been equilaterally applied down there, and it seems to be a singled out thing. And I think it pretty much, and especially this, is that asking for, I'll give you your money for what you did to do my dirty work, but I want to avoid any legal arguments about this. That's a real problem.
Mr. Arnett, do you have a legal analysis of the letter from Navis Inc.?
Well, I've seen the letter just today.
Is it promising payment in your, or is it some kind of a release from future litigation? I don't see it that way. I see it as a promise of payment, but you tell me, as an attorney,
it's a letter indicating that he's going to make payment. You know, I mean, it's a letter.
Right.
It's a letter that says he's going to make payment.
Right.
It's not a contract or a release agreement or a settlement or anything like that.
Right.
It's a promise of payment,
right,
a reimbursement of the $2,875, which,
right,
I presume is the amount of money that was spent for the relocation.
On the check that Mr. Urbanski asked to have.
What's your legal opinion of the second line there?
Well, we will agree to make payment in order to avoid a protracted legal argument regarding the complexity.
What's the complexity?
I don't know.
Shouldn't we get that answer before we even agree to something?
Well, I don't know what the complexities surrounding Mr. Hartsgrove's tenancy. I don't know what that means.
It seems to me that there's a problem that he let him live there under some circumstances which he shouldn't have. Because why would you even say that?
I don't know.
Mr. Francie, do you have anything you'd like to say?
At this point, I'm not sure why we have legal standing to be making the payment, considering that the unit had no CO, and in effect, the man was squatting. So at this point, I don't know that we had obligations under state law to relocate under those circumstances, that the obligation to relocate him really fell completely on the landlord.
Mr. Arnett, would you like to address, because I know you and I have had many communications about several weeks.
Sure.
I had many communications with other attorneys for us over several weeks. I have had no requests for information from anybody at this table. So would you like to try to summarize, because I think you might be more effective?
Okay. I will advise you all, and I know we have, I think just about all of us have spoken from time to time over the last week and a half or so, as to what the statutory requirements are. Anytime that a governmental entity, whether it's a state, county, municipality, takes action that causes a lawful tenancy to be called into jeopardy as a consequence of, let's say, habitability, water and sewer, whatever it might be, the entity that has taken the action that has displaced the individual has an obligation to pay relocation expenses. Now, that is not a handout. What it is a leg up. And it is a circumstance where the municipality or the county or the state pays some money to get the individual out of the facility that is not habitable so they do not end up on the street and into another facility. It is the landlord's obligation to repay that amount. And to that extent, I suspect that's what the letter was from Navison Capital Partners.
You're saying all this, but the Borough of Highlands didn't give him the right to move into that facility at that time for the last 6 months because he didn't have a CO for that facility.
Perhaps that's what he means by the complexity surrounding the tenancy. I don't know. I'm just telling you what the law obligates a governmental entity to do in a circumstance. There needs to be certain criteria met throughout, and when that criteria is met, that triggers the obligation.
I can shed some light as to exactly what happened and how the check was issued. And I would have been happy to do this over the telephone with anybody that had a question. I am also very happy to do it in a public meeting, although I don't appreciate this not having been brought to my attention, having not had an agenda item to give me a clue, and had I not been surprised at a social event on Saturday evening with information I would not have known to be prepared this evening. Well, that I don't appreciate, but I would like to remain.
If you've been having conversations about
remain,
it for weeks,
I would
you
like,
should have brought it up to us.
I would like to remain with the floor.
How would we mind readers?
Excuse me. I'm speaking, and
this
I would like to
disgrace.
Finish. There's no disgrace here. The
yes,
first item that I would like to share is that Paul Vitale visited 49 Paradise Park at the trailer park downtown. On September 17th, inspections were conducted. He ordered a vacation of the structure on that day and demolition by the next day. That is signed on the 18th. Memorializing a visit,
day?
I don't know. He memorialized it on the 18th with this piece of paper. Okay. There is a voucher that is attached here relative to the $2,875, which was paid. It's relocation costs. On visual inspection of the mobile home, there were various electrical violations. There were many water leaks. There were windows that had been replaced with sheetrock inhibiting egress. In short, it was a fire trap. The sewer line to the toilet was separated and raw sewage was leaking outside the line. The interior and the structure was compromised due to water damage. There were no permitted handrails and the rear door was not only side locked but screwed shut. This is not an inspection that I conducted. This is an inspection that was conducted by the construction official of the Borough of Highlands. The information did not come to me until after the inspection was complete. There's information provided by that construction official to me, which was faxed over from the Red Cross regarding condemning or closing of a building. That did not happen here. What happened here is a construction official entered a property, saw an unsafe and hazardous condition, and told human beings they needed to leave that unsafe and hazardous condition immediately. They were living there. That was their home.
But he was there 6 months, Mayor.
Doesn't
he was
matter.
There 6 months.
The construction official took an action on September 17th. And due to that action, a law came into play. Now, at the time I received this information from the construction official, I wasn't aware of this law. So I followed the instructions of the code enforcer, which was to call the American Red Cross. I said, go ahead, call the American Red Cross. I have a letter here dated today, because I needed to document for all of you. In reference to our conversation on September 25th, 2009, of the case pertaining to, and there's a name in here, if you must mention it, I received a phone call from Mr. Paul Murphy asking assistance from the Red Cross for a gentleman who was displaced due to a code violation on his dwelling. After calling the client, I was informed his family was displaced from their dwelling because of multiple code violations that the code enforcer restricted them from living there until it was brought back up to code. The code enforcer here is memorialized as Paul Murphy. It was Paul Vitale that took the action. There is a reference here to a copy of a memo that was received by the author of this letter at the Red Cross. From the state disaster officer for the Red Cross, his name is Kurt Weirich. Recently, a chapter has contacted me because of requests from municipal governments to provide disaster assistance to people who have been forced from their homes purely due to code enforcement actions. Back in 2006, this issue came up, and I corresponded with the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs Code Enforcement Division. There is a state law called the Relocation Assistance Act that requires municipalities to perform certain actions whenever they force tenants, homeowners or businesses from their homes due to code enforcement, eminent domain, or other actions. The act requires them to provide assistance to the affected persons, and the state may provide some reimbursement for them. In this particular case, it says at the end of the letter, before I go on to the next explanation, after receiving the information from Mr. Murphy, he asked me to fax him a copy of this so he could have the town attorney review it. After review, Mr. Murphy called me back to inform me that the attorney's interpretation of the law did not require them to provide relocation assistance. As an advocate for the client, I then called the Department of Community Affairs, meaning this fellow, the signatory to the letter, Leo Pratt, who's the Chief Disaster Officer of the American Red Cross Jersey Coast Region. After speaking with one of the state attorneys from this division, I was informed that yes, indeed, the situation, the Borough of Highlands was responsible for relocation assistance to this client with the information that I presented. I then called Mayor Little to inform her of the information. This is when I first got involved, this phone call, okay, on this issue. Asked that she please call them and confirm the information I was giving to her. A few hours later, I received a phone call from Mayor Little informing me that the Borough of Highlands would be providing relocation assistance to the client. In between, in those few hours later, there was communication with DCA. I have an email to Carolyn Cummins from Emily Templeton, who works for DCA State of New Jersey. She introduces herself as the administrator of the Relocation Assistance Program. We had sent a letter to Michael Tickton, who works as an attorney in the Division of Codes and Standards, Department of Community Affairs, and Mr. Tickton had referred our letter from the Borough of Highlands to Ms. Templeton for a reply. Her emailed reply reads as follows. The Relocation Assistance Program works as a partnership between municipality and the state. When a municipality causes a resident to be displaced, the municipality is responsible for providing relocation assistance to the displacee. It goes on to describe a program called RAP, which does not apply in this circumstance. It references a $1,000 limit on what can be expended, which does not apply in this circumstance. There is additional explanation of requirements on the borough attached here to help find new places for people to live. I believe it's part of the RAP program, does not apply in this circumstance. I then spoke with attorneys who work in the specialized area of substandard housing. I did confer with Mr. Arnett, who was aware of the fact that I was speaking with those attorneys. Those attorneys had already been contacted by the code enforcer relative to the matter. They have given me a detailed analysis. They emailed it to me. They, I think, also emailed it to Mr. Hilling, and it should be in the red folders that have been provided to you here at the table. As quickly as I received this information, I provided it to your box. There is one particular statute that applies, and only one, in this circumstance. It is NJSA 20:4-4.1, displacement by housing or construction code enforcement, where the owner is liable for penalties. It indicates that in the case of any displaced persons by housing or construction code enforcement, including rehabilitation necessitated by that enforcement, in which the owner of the real property has in any final court adjudication been held liable for a civil or criminal penalty. That has not happened in this particular case. However, I've been advised by counsel that this statute will also cover the circumstances in this case. And then it goes on to say, all relocation costs incurred pursuant to sections 4 and 6 of the Public Law 1971 shall be paid by the owner of the real property to the public agency making relocation assistance payments upon presentation to the owner by the public agency of a statement of those relocation costs and of the date upon which the relocation costs are due and payable. We did issue, through Mr. Hilling's office, a letter to the landowner, Navisink Capital Partners, LLC, who have since issued a letter confirming their intention to make the payment.
They're paying for all these attorneys that we used in the meantime?
I don't believe we've been billed for that at this point. So at this point in time, what has happened is the statute, because it was our construction code official that required that these inhabitants leave their home, it was incumbent upon the Borough of Highlands under state statute to assist in relocation. The first steps I took was to take them over to social services to see if they were eligible there. They were denied eligibility. I contacted subsidized housing. I was told that due to prior applications having already been evaluated, they were not eligible there. This is a working family. They have too much income for this kind of help. At this point in time, I went from that stage to discussing with the tenant what efforts he was making to locate a new place to live and whether he could sleep at night in the home of a family member. At first, he represented that he could. When I shared the information of where he was living with a code enforcer here in the borough, that code enforcer told me that it would not be the code for that number of people and that he would have to enforce a code in that circumstance. When I spoke to the tenant again, I said, where do you intend to move? He made application in two locations outside of town where there was no space available. He did eventually come to me and indicate that he did have one location that he could afford, and there was the opportunity to make the payment for relocation. The amount would be $2,875. He could handle the rent payments from that point on. No way, in no moment in time would the Borough of Highlands have been responsible for any rental payments on behalf of anybody. This was a single one-time payment to secure a location, and we were responsible for putting him out by action of our code enforcement official. Having done this, I reviewed the law further because it became apparent that there would be a need for me to justify my actions. And therefore, I have looked at another law which would have applied if it were an illegal tenancy. There has been talk of this being an illegal tenancy. That did not result in displacement at this time. The code official's actions resulted in displacement in this case. However, if there is an illegal tenancy, the landlord would be on the hook for 6 times the monthly rent, which in this case is not documented. It was offered to me by the tenant that he believes he is paying $500. There are many other facts surrounding this circumstance that are not relevant to the action that I took, and I'm choosing not to discuss them publicly unless they're brought up by someone else. You're talking about the lives of a 4-month-old baby with a heart murmur, a 2-year-old with asthma, who are innocents that don't need their private lives discussed in public unless absolutely necessary. You are dealing with, in addition to that, the lives of certain employees on the part of this Navisink Capital Partners and employees in the Borough of Highlands who may be complicated by public discussion of some of these facts. I think it would have been a much better procedure for those who became aware of this and had a question to ask the borough administrator about what went on. He was kept apprised at every step, and if they needed further information from me, I would be very, very happy to discuss it by telephone. Those who have approached me from the public and had a question about that have gotten clear, concise, and accurate information from me on this very issue between the date when it occurred and today. So that's what I have to say on the matter. I will also indicate that when this occurred, I did not have the benefit of delegating responsibilities to the borough administrator or to the code enforcer, as both had taken a vacation, a pre-planned, organized, and approved vacation. And this came to a head in an emergency nature. There was a state agency interested in the welfare of these children. There was a risk that if something was not done at the moment that it was done, that those children might be taken from their parents, placed in foster care. It was an emergency situation. As an executive here in the borough, I was able to declare that emergency. No checks were issued without conference by telephone with the CFO, who then informed me, after all of this research, that there is a line item in the borough's budget in the amount of $8,000 entitled relocation costs under the code enforcement budget. And it was from that line item in the budget that this check was drawn, and there is a commitment toward reimbursement.
With all that said, what's going to be the action? Are we going to let the same landlord that got off the hook in this instance go on? Did you just have one trailer that he rents inspected? Did you have them all inspected? What are the actions? And what are the complexities, because this is public information, regarding his tenancy? Apparently he was in there illegally. This is a problem. This is a real problem, especially when you expend taxpayers' funds that you say you're going to get back with according to this letter, is get back with some kind of off-the-hook clause. You know, enough is enough. You know there's problems there, something's got to be done. And something should have been done the minute this was brought up, not 3 weeks later. If he was living there, and I'm sorry, children are children, and if they want to live under them conditions, then maybe some action by a state agency was necessary. But from my understanding, he was living there, his relatives worked there, he knew what he moved into, okay? So that doesn't make it right. There's other people who probably live in the same conditions, but this was done under his own accord.
And if it's
a little bit too blunt, so be it, but that's the way it has to be.
I just want to answer Mr. Urbanski before I give you the floor, Bill, okay? I have a citation dated July 22, 2009, issued by the code enforcer against a tenant in the same location. I have a citation dated September 22, 2009, against a tenant in the same location, different residence, same general location. I have another one issued the same day against a tenant. Another
for
issue
for COs or for nonsense?
Not grass and fence.
Yeah, for nonsense.
There are 9 or 11 units without COs.
And half of
those. Well, I think this needs to be taken before the code enforcer. I think you're out of the scope of what I did.
Okay,
I need to talk to your employees.
Well, then if you don't think the job was being done, why don't you step up to the plate?
I took an issue which was presented to me.
I brought this up a month ago, and you don't want to address it.
Excuse me. That's inaccurate.
All right, it's always inaccurate.
An issue was presented to me on the date, Madam Clerk? September 20th. September 5th? 25th. September 25th. On that date, I did due diligence. I sought legal counsel. I spoke to the CFO and declared an emergency appropriately. Action was taken. Reimbursement has been sought. That was the scope of my involvement here. If you need to do an administrative survey of what's going on in your code enforcement department, that is not something that I need to answer for right now. It's something that Mr. Hilling needs to address as the administrator, and your code enforcer needs to explain. If you want to discuss an employee, you need to rice him.
You don't think
he gets the option of whether it needs he you need to rice the employee.
So everybody
they
else
get discussed, they get the option of it being discussed in public or in private. You did rice this gentleman. You didn't talk about this. You talked about other things. I think you're inappropriate in the way you're approaching me. I've made that clear. I think we should move on. Mr. Chiazza.
Okay. On the same issue here, you know. Mr. Murphy went down to the trailer right before this all happened and was giving the guy a CO.
No, he didn't give the guy a CO.
Listen, Anna, I asked Mr. Murphy.
We talked on the phone with
I asked Mr. Murphy, too, in person, face-to-face.
I saw him today. Mr. Hilling, you were present, right?
I'm going to tell him how I heard from him. Mr. Murphy says, I went down there. I went in there. He said, you got 3 or 4 violations here. You've been here 6 months. You're going to fix them? You want a CO? Oh, yeah, I want to stay here. Not even 45 minutes later, Mr. Murphy was processing the CO paperwork in the borough hall. And the person that was renting at it at a thing called the Highlands Police Department says, oh, I got wires and stuff hanging down here. Mr. Murphy went back down again. He said, I thought you wanted to stay here. Yeah, but this and that and that. And it led on. And somebody sent the building inspector down there, like on a Wednesday. They moved the guy out, the sad thing, and they moved him to another location. It just passed the CO today with 2 inspections, with the guy living in another place. That's what I don't understand. They moved him from one disaster to another disaster. And today he finally got a CO after 2 failed inspections, Mayor, from there.
The actions that were taken on behalf of the Borough of Highlands were to secure a permanent residence consistent with the state.
It was no better than the one he was in.
I don't want to finish what I have to say.
It was no better than the one he was in.
It was to secure a permanent location in consistency with the state statute. There was no permission for anybody to live anywhere without an appropriate CO being issued. There was an application required by me in person from the landlord, filled out and signed and filed here with the borough before that check was issued. There was no permission by anyone for anyone to live anywhere without a certificate of occupancy. The scope of my action was to secure that location because of the emergency and nothing more.
Well, how do you move from one uninhabitable place to another? Did he get the check for a place that you couldn't get a CO on? It's the same scenario.
It's the same procedure that would happen if a private individual went in. You place your deposit, the CO is applied for. After you've placed your deposit, the CO is obtained, and then you move in.
Who's moved in before that?
Well, that I don't know about. That's out of the scope of what my actions involved.
Listen, I understand your actions, but you knew there was a problem. That's what I have a problem with.
I knew there was a problem.
Don't say there was.
I knew on the 25th when I got a phone call from the Red Cross that they spoke to. No, this issue is about the construction official's actions.
Who sent the construction official?
Who sent him there?
I didn't send him there.
He just went there?
He went there because there were complaints made about a demolition that had occurred under a permit that was issued by him. And those complaints came into the borough, and he went down and inspected.
At your prompting.
He went because there was a complaint received at the borough because the demolition had been done and the conditions were inappropriate. And that complaint was received as the executive authority in the absence of the borough administrator and the absence of the code enforcer. I called the construction official and said, there's no code enforcer here. It's a construction permit. Get down and see if the complaint has merit. I did my job.
You just said he went at a call here. You just said you called him.
There was a complaint received at the borough. He responded to the complaint. There was no administrator, or the administrator would have called him. There's nothing inappropriate about what was done here. And I believe if Mr. Arnett were to give the advice, you would be disappointed. I've spoken to him. He understands what I did.
I
he at no time told me that I was doing something inappropriate.
Statute. You want to go inspect every rental here and displace people? Go right ahead. That's
what
you're opening
us up to. There was a complaint
received
on this one. I responded to the complaint in accordance with my duties as an executive in this town in the absence of the administrator.
You didn't see anything else wrong down that place.
I didn't go there.
Nobody else did.
It wasn't my job to go there. It is the code enforcer construction official's job to do that.
Only single requests.
Sometimes people do their jobs and they find problems, and sometimes complaints come in and you react to them. In this particular case, a complaint was lodged and a reaction occurred. That's what happened in this particular case.
The action should have been, listen, Mr. Landlord, you've been letting this go on illegally for some time.
Well, there was communication.
You better straighten it out.
There was communication with the landlord, and I think I have Ms. Cummins to witness that. I know that there was significant communication
because
with the landlord
letter,
by the administrator before and after this occurred.
The letter from him is very unsettling.
Well, you need to speak to him about his
no,
letter.
No, I don't
I just
need
want
to speak to him. I'm not an enforcement agent. I don't deal with people on cut side deals. Like, we will agree to make payment in order to avoid a protracted legal argument regarding the complexities surrounding Mr. Hartsgrove's tenancy.
That
smells bad just reading it. And it's
Is he gonna Mr.
Bolderman? You're gonna have to speak to him.
Is Mr. Bolderman paying for all the legal fees and everything with Mr. Arnett?
Arnett, would you please explain how the statute works? I'm doing my best. Explain how the statute works, please, so they can understand what happened here.
Well, I did once, but Mr. McNamara was the one who you consulted with initially, but
and then
we
I
spoke
did speak
afterwards.
To
no,
you
no,
because I felt like
did.
I was stepping on your toes, and you did say I was doing the right thing, as far as speaking to Mr. McNamara.
Absolutely, and I think the statute's clear, and I think I don't need to repeat.
I know the statute.
Am I getting your money back?
I'm sorry.
I was in your shoes.
Your money back, and Mr. McNamara's, and this or no?
Well, I don't have any. I don't think I have any time into it, really, other than.
Would we be entitled to get that money back?
Yeah. Well, would you be entitled to get your reasonable attorney's fees back in this situation? Of course you would.
But what do you think of that second line in there? You have no opinion.
I don't. I gotta be honest with you. I don't know what the complexity.
Don't
I'm not
you
trying
think,
to be difficult, but.
Don't you think we should investigate the complexities here? Because apparently there's a problem. I'll give you your $2,800.
You can do
but
that.
But I want to be off the.
Issue.
Well, then I'm ordering it.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you have the power to order it. But
I think I'll ask for a
table,
vote on it.
If the people at the table want an investigation into the complexities, go
check
right ahead.
I
am an extremely transparent person. There is nothing there that involves me.
Every CO check down there, I want every trailer check to make sure it's livable.
Bruce, are you listening and taking notes?
Right.
Because this
I mean,
is you're going to have to follow these instructions. Mr. Chiazza, this
these
is your department. Do you agree with Mr. Urbanski?
Exactly.
Okay, fine. Because my reaction to the situation was to call the councilman assigned to the department, which I did, and he was aware of my action on the day it occurred.
And he gave you advice not to do it. And he was told that you moved ahead.
Hey, what
do
you
want
to say? Wait, Chris, go ahead. Let her say what she wants to say. And I'll tell you what advice I gave her on Friday morning.
Put it in your words, Billy.
The mayor called me at 2501. I was walking into Superfood Town in Fort Monmouth because I run a business as a manager in a restaurant. And she told me, I said, I'll get back to you in a little while. I called her back at 2:45 the same day.
You said you'd be back to me in an hour, and I didn't have an objection to how long it took.
I run a business, Mayor.
Me too. You
know? Okay.
I'm an attorney.
Okay. That's very good. I'm a restaurant manager. And I called her back at 2:45 in the afternoon on that Friday, and Friday's one of my busy days in the restaurant business. So I said, "Mayor, this is Billy." He said, "Yes, Billy, I already, I got something to say to you. I know you probably got something to say to me." I said, "Okay, you go first." She laid out the line that they relocated this person and spent the $2,875. I said, my advice would have been, don't write the check.
And I explained that I had gotten advice from the Red Cross that they would not relocate. I told you about DCA, and we both agreed that it would be better in the future to immediately send people to landlord-tenant court before you have a demolition, which then results in an unsafe condition.
Let me finish.
You agreed to that.
Don't get nervous. You know, as an attorney,
all the detail was provided to you, Mr. Chiazza, and if people had questions, you cooperated in an ambush this evening against me. And this is what I'm objecting to most. Explaining this doesn't bother me. Explaining it in private or in public doesn't bother me. The ambush bothers me.
It's not the ambush.
It's an ambush.
I didn't get a call about this. I had to find out about it on my own.
I didn't describe it as an ambush. The person that brought it to my attention told me I was being ambushed.
Whatever
it's not even my word. Other people perceived it that way.
Whatever you think, how you think it is, Mayor. But you, I told you, you're the mayor, you got the power, you do what you think is right.
Well, what you all need to do at this point, if you want to control what goes on here in reaction to these circumstances, is sit down and have a meeting and discuss policy, because you have no ordinance on your books right now and no resolution with regard to policy that tells anybody what to do in these circumstances. So if anyone is at fault for what's gone on here, it's the governing body that exists now and those prior for not addressing this issue. And by the way, this is not the first time. This is not the first. This is not the first time this has happened. The last time it happened, as per the CFO's description to me, $13,000 were expended for people to be housed in a hotel.
You're right, Mayor.
And litigation ensued.
Mayor,
and it was proven that the borough was responsible.
Mayor.
And I found that out before the check was issued.
Mayor, we removed them two tenants, the double apartment
on Miller
Street.
And you removed this one, this family too. You removed this family via Mr. Paul Vitale, construction official.
That place had a CO, but the families destroyed it so bad, it wasn't livable.
That's even a worse circumstance than this one.
It wasn't livable.
They're living in there for 6 months and it's that bad. You've got to be out of your mind to begin with.
Well, you've got
to
take that up with the individuals. My activity is very
narrow in scope. No, it's got to be taken up with the landlord is where it's got to be taken.
Well, you can go ahead and do that.
But you don't want no part of that.
The two Murphys tomorrow morning, they're gonna tell me their story one more time. And if they change their stories, I'm going to rise them and they're going to come in and tell the public next month.
Only if they choose to discuss it in public, because it doesn't work that way.
They'll choose, Mayor.
Okay.
The reality in this situation, the only one who has benefited from this is the landlord.
Actually, he has not, because even under the illegal tenancy, he would have been responsible for $3,000, and what he is paying is $2,875. And if you want to go after him for legal fees, your attorney just told you can. So he didn't benefit. Yeah. What happened is a family was able to get off the street in a reasonable period of time under emergent conditions, and children are with their parents. All that happened to
them. They had a slot in Holly Hill that the landlord agreed to pay to get them there.
And they rejected them upon, I don't know what, credit search or background search. They were rejected at Holly Hill, and then they came back and found this place where they're living now. And I don't even want to put the address. This is very intrusive on this family.
And it took two inspections to have it passed CO.
Which is the fault of that new landlord. It has nothing to do with the scope of my action.
You wrote a check to the landlord. The place should have been inspected that day.
Can I hear an address to my request that a policy be established here? Because no matter what I did, we would have been in trouble. Either we expend the money and we're on the hook for $2,875, or we risk litigation, in which we would have been found responsible for much more.
Are we responsible?
We're talking about less than $3,000, which is going to be reimbursed. You're making a very big issue here.
Are we responsible?
Make policy.
Are we responsible for providing relocation assistance to squatters, Mr. Attorney?
In an unsafe condition, an illegal inhabitant?
Well, to squatters, if what you mean by squatters is people who just have a house unknown to the landlord, not paying rent.
No, they're paying rent.
The answer is...
They weren't paying rent.
They weren't paying rent.
The answer is no.
The whole thing started because he's not paying rent.
No, that is not how it started. Mm, you have misinformation, Mr. Francie.
I got it from Mr. Bowman. Please, I got it from Mr. Bowman. Has nothing.
Well, there's information being left out. I'm going to tell you right now. That is not how this started. And the way this started is going to open a whole other can of worms. And let me tell you, the only action that involves this check, the only action that involves this check is the action of your construction official. If you have an issue with his action, he has provided you documentation and a very thin phone to go ask him.
He's the only one who did right.
What's the whole other thing?
He didn't
really
sit down there. That's the only reason he went down. Did it? Because he was told to go down there and do his job.
Well, you read the list of things, he had to do what he did.
What's the other can of worms?
He did what he did, and the borough needed to do what he did.
Somebody's got to be responsible. If there's a can of worms, you should open them up. Let them all crawl out down there.
We'd have to rice an employee to do that.
Let's do it.
Do what you got to do. That's what you're here for. You got to uphold it.
You got 11 COs that aren't written. You have a CO. Can you write a CO? A CO citation retroactively at this point.
Well, why don't you instruct Mr. Hilling as to who you guys want riced?
Whoever's the can of worms, Bruce.
Bryce, the building inspector, and Murphy. And we want them here next meeting. We want them both here.
Right.
And if they want to sign an application for public, I tell them to hope they give them a full pen.
And Mr. Murphy's action after this is to write 35 citations for grass cutting and say, I'm doing the job now. That's wrong.
He was sent down there before then, Chris.
I understand that, but the citations got written after this.
You're right. So we're going to bring him in here, and we're going to straighten it out.
That looks vindictive.
I would like to see some policy on what you do when a borough official puts someone out of a house. If you don't like what happened, you need to say what you want to see happen.
I think we have to decide, are we moving forward? If people don't have COs and they're not supposed to be there, are we going to move forward with this kind of action?
There's no law that requires action if there's no COs. You need to be clear on what it is we need to address. Only if your code enforcement official declares a house unsafe to the point where people need to immediately be removed. That's what you have to address.
Yeah, but who's going to be responsible if they don't have a CO?
It has nothing to do with a certificate of occupancy.
Absolutely,
that's a landlord-tenant issue.
The whole case turns on the CO.
No, it doesn't. It's
there.
The construction official. How many times do I have to say the same thing?
My suggestion.
Say it as often as you want.
My suggestion.
It's the construction official's action that results in this.
My suggestion would be, if I could be so bold.
What did they call up and say, I'm living here without a CO. Come down and kick me out. I don't want to live here no more. That's baloney.
You can run a survey.
Yes, it is. That's what happened 100% completely. Don't sugarcoat it. That's what happened.
There's no sugarcoating. I don't want to live
here. I don't want to live here. A relative runs it. I'm living in squalor. I have a problem with these people.
He was working for the company.
Everybody knows. That's what I don't like about it. Everybody knows. Nobody wants to address.
Mr. Arnett, did I take proper action or not? Oh, God.
Who authorized that check, Anna? You? Did you authorize the check?
Yeah. With the agreement of the CFO. There was a line item in your budget.
Why didn't you call us, Steve, and tell us you're writing a $2,800 check?
It's an executive action. And I called you, and you knew.
For several reasons. One, the mayor declared an emergency. And she is the chief executive officer.
Yeah, but the ordinance says only the CFO or the administrator can authorize.
Well, I spoke to the CFO.
Well, I authorized the check based on what she said, that it was an emergency situation. Now,
the second thing
that came into play was this did not set precedent. We have done this before.
Thank you.
And in that situation...
We've done it before, Steve, because the tenant...
It was court ordered.
The tenants,
would have been court ordered here
the
too.
Tenants okay. Destroyed the household. You couldn't live in it no more.
Regardless of the specific facts that surround anything.
It was a CO building at the time these tenants moved in on Miller Street, and they destroyed the house.
It's still a code enforcement issue is what it came down to. And the same type of issue that happened back where it cost us the $13,000 and forced us into court to recoup. Okay, this is a similar situation. Now, she's the chief executive officer, and if she authorizes the emergency, then who am I to say no?
You're not involved in this, I don't think. You know what it is? It was a prompting by the tenant. The other one wasn't a prompting by the tenant. It was a prompting by the officials on their own power. That's the issue.
Regardless, though, when she issues the emergency and the code, well, in this case, the construction official.
Construction official started the issue.
Then you have the the basis for the emergency.
Get out of here.
So, you know, I would do a similar situation, and we've had similar situations, take it outside of code enforcement, of emergencies in other departments where I've gotten calls from other people on council that said we have an emergency situation, we got to get this fixed, or we got to get that fixed, or we got to buy this, or whatever the case may be. It's really a courtesy extended to the governing body, and if you're in charge of public works, or you're in charge of...
But this wasn't as imminent as it's made out to be. He was
John,
living.
I'm not
arguing that, but that's my point. You're living in there for 6 months. This didn't, you know, just fall down in the last week, this place. You were living in there under some kind of agreement going on with employees there, with the owner, and then something prompted that I don't want to be here no more. Whatever that is has to be flushed out because it's not right.
If the trailer was not unsafe, we would not be talking about this. The trailer was unsafe. Your code construction official...
It
wasn't
safe when he moved in there.
No, that is not what your construction official said. Your construction official had a permit for demolition.
He couldn't say that because nobody inspected it for a CO when he moved in there.
It's
so
not about the CO. I'm really
know.
Beginning to feel circular here. It's not about the CO. The
sure
construction... Excuse me. The construction official issued a permit for demolition. Under that permit for demolition, action was taken while the tenants were living in the location. After the demolition was accomplished, the complaint came in, and the construction code official who had signed the permit went down to inspect the premises. And at that point, he said, "You guys cannot stay here. I read the list of reasons."
How's he living
that's
in a place
when I was
that's
able
got
to
a
get
permit
involved.
For demolition? How can you live in a place that's got a permit for demolition?
Why did he give him
this
a
list? This is ridiculous.
Why did he give
well,
him a list?
Well, I called your code enforcer earlier about the other issues, and we stayed out of it. Once your construction official took the action, there was an obligation, there was no choice. I conferred with legal counsel. I came to the same conclusion. I spoke to the CFO, and the check was issued. A CO application was obtained. Reimbursement is promised. That's it.
How can the structure official give a building demolition if you don't go down and inspect if the gas and the water and the power is cut off?
You got to ask the construction official how he
tomorrow.
Does his job.
Don't worry about that. We'll be looking for a new one.
You know, and...
We'll be looking for a couple new employees in the borough.
At this point, we need to get back to the agenda.
We're going to be looking for a couple employees.
Sure.
Mark my word.
Who is responsible for getting restitution from the landlord now? Is
it something? It goes through, Pat de Blasio was consulted with regard to that. Okay. It's being done through substandard housing in a similar fashion. The information from the building department and from the financial department was provided to the clerk for tax collector. And the clerk issued the form letter that went out. The letter that we have from NavaSync Management, whatever it is a response to that letter. We had stated that we needed payment within 30 days. He's obviously, the signatory on the letter may make payment before that time, but we're going to find out.
I mentioned in the letter that if he didn't, he could have a lien placed against him.
Yep, and you can force sale for a lien.
I'd like an explanation on the avoid protracted legal argument. Okay, Scott? Is that fair to ask for? Because I don't think we should enter this letter with this clause. It's not acceptable.
I think you need to create some policy. And I think you need to have some legal advice when you do it. That's what I think. And I would have been very happy to look at a borough ordinance and follow whatever
common
it said.
Sense
it doesn't exist.
Guided this
even
one.
That's not common sense. It's the law, dear. You have to follow the law.
Correct.
The law is in one category. And common sense is often somewhere
all
else. But Mr. Pfeffer did look for the ordinance as well. I'm not the only one that didn't find it. Okay? There isn't one.
Absent the law, then consultation could have gotten us out of this mess.
There was
you
a lot.
Billy. You did not call Johnny. You did not call me.
But But there was no need for a resolution. It was executive action under an emergent circumstance. I spoke to the councilman who's the liaison to the department, and questions could have been answered. You seem to reach me when you want to. You should have reached me about this before today.
It happened on a Friday within a two-hour period.
Today is October...
It was too late. The check was cut. What was to do after he did it?
You know, if you're going to do this, you could have made a phone call, John. It's
Why make a phone call? You
this
didn't
is
make
inappropriate
phone call
treatment of me. If a member
no,
of
not.
The public came to public portion
no,
and had
you
a question...
No, you've got to be responsible for your actions.
I am.
Yeah, by the law, but not as a good steward of our community. Sorry that I got to say that,
wow.
But that's the way I feel.
I did my job as mayor of this town. I did it appropriately. I did it in accordance with legal advice.
I did it with the approval of the landlord. I know.
Definitely did not. The Humane Society wouldn't let an animal live like that.
Well, why would,
I'm
you,
not
why
protecting
would somebody
a
live in there then?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I'm not protecting a landlord, and you're accusing me of that.
Well, he got off the hook.
He did not.
He got what he wanted.
He did not.
Apparently he did. Why is he so willing to pay it up then right away?
Because.
He got what he wanted.
Because
you
I think he got some work. Legal advice. No, he got some legal advice.
I guess.
A month from now, are we going to be talking about whether he paid or not, Anna?
I cannot verify that. I'm telling you I have a letter in hand committing to the payment, and I expect it to be received on time.
Okay.
That's where I am right now. I think I'd like to now make a motion on the payment of bills.
So moved.
We'll need a second.
Second.
I don't think we need any further discussion, do we? Roll call.
Mr. Grimsey?
Yes.
Ms. Kane?
Yes.
Mr. Chiazza? Mr. Mansky?
No, I refuse to pay for that.
Mayor Little?
Yes. Okay, we are now on to committee reports. At this point, I will turn to Mr. Pfeffer for the Finance Committee report. If there is anyone that is providing a written report, please indicate whether you're going to be adding to it or whether you're citing things that are contained within it.
My report concerns two matters. One would be the budget, and the second one I'll address first, which is a question Mr. McManrod had brought up at the last meeting on the sewer bills. We are addressing that with our software provider, and we are hopeful that we are going to be able to go forward with that, which would be one sewer bill sent out once a year with all four quarters on it. So we're in the process of working on that. The second thing I wanted to talk about was the budget. We've had many, many, many meetings on the budget as a finance committee and as a citizens finance committee. And we are, in my opinion, I think ready to proceed for introduction with the one caveat that I still could use some guidance on, which is the capital portion of that. I can put something together based on a lot of discussions that we have had. A consensus would be nice. It's not necessary, I think. I got an idea. We can always modify, but it would be nice if we could have, you know, at least the three of us have a consensus as a finance committee.
I can tell you that I had a conversation pursuant to some things that you were requesting with the engineer, who indicates that he's going to forward to me. He says he's given it to me before, but he's going to forward to me specifics on that. You know, the approach we were going to take to use grant money or a trust fund in order to fund the drainage.
I have something that I think
you were waiting on information?
Yeah.
I'm going to be seeking an agenda item on a bond amount for that, I believe, only at this point, so that we can try to take advantage of the grant money.
Well,
I don't know what everybody's feeling here is at the table. We're going to have to discuss it between now and the agenda.
Let me just expand on that a little bit, just so everybody's clear on that. When we originally talked about the drainage and doing a town-wide drainage program, you know, we've had several discussions here at the council. The engineer had originally, we were throwing numbers around in the $4 million range. And in conversations that I had had after that with him was, that is there any way we could get this drainage program into the state's infrastructure trust fund?
That's
it's not a grant, it's a low-cost financing vehicle And the other thing that it would do is it would allow us to proceed without the down payment, which was a big issue because it's 5%. Let's say it is $4 million. It would be 5% of the $4 million. And that $200,000 was an issue. So it was a budgetary issue. So what we had spoke about, Rob and I had spoke about, was could we put together a much smaller bond where we could do the application, authorize the application out of that money, get to the infrastructure trust, get approval, and then move forward with the larger project. And at times at the council meetings, some people had said, could we do it in pieces? So we really kind of, that's kind of like where we left it. And I guess what you're referring to now is for Rob to come with that final amount so that we can do the application, get our application in before the Environmental Infrastructure Trust.
The deadline for that application is November 2nd, so we're going to have to put the application in, hopefully with a resolution of support from the council. We won't know that until next meeting. We would need to get the funding in place quickly.
Well,
he wanted the funding in place before we put the application. That's impossible right now.
It'll take, obviously, it's like a 6-week
two meetings
process.
At least. So he said that it is possible to make the application with a resolution of support. I need to be sure that what designs are being proposed are acceptable. I know Mr. Francie has expressed concerns about whether certain items would be covered. I also know he's had meetings, and we have not discussed this. So things need to be discussed between now and next meeting.
And again, with the Finance Committee, so that we can firm up what we want to put into the
right. The other item that's been discussed on and off, specifically between Rebecca Kane and myself, is perhaps coming up with a concept for Borough Hall. But, you know, we're hesitant to put it on the capital budget as an item that we want to accomplish in the short term right now.
Right.
We talked about surveying, talked about surveying the different departments and trying to assess needs and then come up with practical requirements. And we're not sure at what point, whether it would be this fiscal year coming or the following, when we would be able to get to where we need either an architect or someone to do a conceptual drawing. You might not need an architect to do a concept.
Well, I think, and at several meetings, budget meetings that we've had, at least the three of us had, we decided to take the initial funding for that off the table at this point for this budget and push that back to possibly the next budget.
Right. I think we need to be realistic with the taxpayers at this point,
right,
regarding whether we're going to expend funds or not. I don't think we need to be taking money from the taxpayers for something that might not be accomplished in the fiscal year in which we're collecting.
And we have, there's actually two pieces to this, one of which has no financial impact from the standpoint of taxes on the budget. That's called the capital budget, and that's really a wish list plan.
Right.
Okay. That has no impact unless you pick an item off it and say we're going to do that now. But other than that, it's just, this is what we'd like to accomplish over the next 6 years, whether that gets accomplished or not, who knows. But that has, that piece of paper itself has no financial impact. But the piece that does...
You don't have to reserve a certain percentage of whatever you would bond at that point.
No, I'm getting to that part.
That's the part that...
That part where we do have to set aside the down payment money, that's where we should get very specific about what we want to put money in there for. For instance, we did a bond ordinance just recently, an amendment for Valley Street. We had to spend a little bit of money out of there. We're doing one at the next meeting for Wooderwich. We'll have to spend a little bit of money. So those kind of things... You know, I'm not so concerned about the small ones. It's whatever that you guys decide on the bigger ones so that we know that we can cover those bigger ones. So that's really what we need to sit down. And I think, without digging through all my papers at this point, I think the last time I looked at that number, we were someplace in the $120,000 range, I think. So we really, that might be the number. As far, I don't know, but we want to, you know, I would like to get your consensus on what that number is. And then we can talk about the bigger picture, about where we want to list out.
We'll come up to that unless you have an answer now.
Well, A, I don't have an answer now, but B, what was discussed at the last Citizens Budget Committee is that they would like a presentation to the council on
their
recommendations at the next workshop meeting.
Right, but that, okay, but that's not, I understand that, but that really didn't impact, in that committee, we never talked about these capital needs.
Correct.
Right.
All right, so the capital is a separate pad,
right.
All right? And at this point,
I will make, well, I'm not sure how you want to handle this at this point. The next meeting, we need to, as a group, get a consensus as to...
As well, we as a council...
Correct.
This is, as a council, now really what I'm speaking to is as a council.
We want to propose a budget.
And yeah, well, I think we should at least, we don't have to rush the process. We should just get started on the process so that at least we're underway. And because the state is not ready. The pension numbers are not out, and I'm sure they're not coming out until after this election, this governor's election.
I think the Finance Committee, meaning Mr. Francie and myself, did have a goal of a flat budget, which I don't think we've accomplished yet.
Well, I can say that you are not that far away.
Okay.
And that's where
we
the budget...
We would like to accomplish that.
That's where the Budget Committee has some suggestions. That's where they would like to have this input, make a presentation in front of the workshop, and present some of their ideas about how we may be able to get to a flat budget.
Okay, so in light of that, now that's a month away.
Correct.
Okay, so what do you want to do from the budget standpoint, from the committee standpoint, okay, where we actually prepare this thing and present it and bring it to the council? Where do you want to go from here then today? Are you saying let's wait for that and then go for the introduction?
I think Anne is absolutely right. We need to firm up the capital commitment.
Right, but we can do that.
Yeah. We can do that as a committee, and then we can propose, and certainly there will be additions. Right. If anyone at the table has a capital project in mind that hasn't been mentioned, please let us know, and we'll try to include it. Because the wish list, the part of it that doesn't impact the dollars and cents, but that just declares to the public more or less what we're thinking, that part's easy for us, and we can expand that in any direction any member of the council wishes to expand it. Where we need to have those percentage reserve, I keep forgetting
it's
what you call them.
5% down payment.
Down payments for the bonds. That's the one where we want to be careful. We don't want to put that in a budget unless we think we're going to accomplish it that year or take such action that the down payment's necessary in that particular year, because you're collecting money out of households where the economy's tough.
Right, and if you don't need it in that year, then there's no sense.
Wait till the following. Yeah.
So we really want to work that number a little bit, get that down to where it should, whatever the number might be. And then, you know, we've put the recommended percentages for the pension in based on all the information we've received from various sources via the state, via the legal municipalities, conference of mayors, whatever. We've taken all that into consideration, so we have that estimate in there. So we're good for an introduction, you know, and as we go along in that process, hopefully we get final numbers from the state on the pension system, and we'll be in pretty good shape. We, like I said, and I sent out some documents to the committee, we are under all the caps. We don't have a problem. We are... comparatively speaking to many municipalities, even in Monmouth County, way ahead of the curve for this year as far as the budget goes. There are many towns that are going to have severe calendar year problems. And we, you as a council, did not take that pension deferral, which was a great move, because that's going to come back to haunt plenty of people who did take that. So we are in very good shape. Our budget is sound. Our revenue picture, while depressed throughout the state and depressed here equally so, is set to numbers that I think are realistic.
Okay.
So
I would like to work on, and I don't think we can do it this budget necessarily, but I would like to work on concepts and then obviously operational procedures that will allow us to increase the revenue side, but not from tax collection.
Right.
Now, there's a couple opportunities for that, but it requires action at the council table.
I've told you guys on the group on the committee that we can't put something in that we don't have formal documentation on.
You can't go in until we're done with it.
Right.
Here.
So that may, you know, while that may work out, it may not work out for this budget, but it could
might
be
the next
that.
One.
Right. And the only thing that will happen between now and the point of time of an adoption is we have couple of revenues, small revenues in the budget that we're going to have to massage because of the documentation issues. And there are some other revenue items that we can put put in to offset any kind of potential reduction we have to take on those other revenues. So I think we've got that all covered. So I think we're in good shape. And now it's just the process of moving forward.
And just one question on capital. We have, we're expecting a letter from the state on the approval to decommission the Imhoff tank. And
is that the sewer plant?
Sewer plant.
Okay.
And once we get that letter of approval, we're going to go out. We have preliminary bids. We're going to go out and get formal bids. But at this point, we could break ground in 30 days.
Well, that ordinance is already in place.
Okay. I just want to clarify
The only thing that would come into play is if the bids came in higher than what the ordinance is for.
277 was the number, right?
I don't remember what we did the ordinance for. I don't remember off the top of the
head. Not important.
We have a bond ordinance in place.
We do. So at this point, this has nothing to do...
No, that's already done. That won't impact this budget unless we have the increase.
Right.
Okay. Mayor, if I could remind you, we only have one meeting in November, the day after election. That's the only meeting in November.
Okay.
So I don't know if we want to make that a workshop or regular. Have we determined that?
It's got to be combined in my mind.
Because we would need to have we need to have some action on the, yes, we have to make it combined.
Right, so
there's a number of reasons.
I'm on hold as far as anything with introduction, but right. Pending the Citizens Committee.
We owe you definition of capital, and we'll be working on that.
Okay.
But for the November meeting, we should have
a presentation from the Budget Review Committee. Right. I'm looking forward to their suggestions. Some of the things that have been discussed in that Budget Review Committee are very exciting. Some of them are quick implementation, some of them are not, but I think everything is worthwhile pursuing.
Right. And they've worked very hard. At this point, they're going to make a formal presentation, PowerPoint presentation, and so I think it's a good plan going forward for the town, not just for this budget.
Okay, so then that's my report, and that's where we stand.
Very good.
Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Pepper from the table on his report? I usually do allow him to be excused at this time. Let me just take a look at what else we have here. The donations, I don't think we need him for. Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, the next committee report on the list is DPW.
Thanks, Steve. Bruce, do you want to tell them what they're going to do on Thursday?
Absolutely, I can do that, Mayor. A couple of things relating to DPW, Mayor. We do have a new superintendent, acting superintendent, Reggie Robeson. He started 1 October. Reggie's jumping right in there and doing a great job starting off. Effective the 5th of October, we've gone to once a week garbage pickup. Zones 1 and 3 are being picked up Mondays. Zones 2 and 4 being picked up on Tuesdays. And recycling stays on Wednesday. We're starting to get a couple of calls about next Monday. That is not a holiday for the Borough of Highlands. We will be working a normal work day next Monday. So garbage pickup will remain the same next Monday. Relating to that matter, one of the main reason we went to the once we pick up was to free up the department to do other things in town that we desperately needed to do. Thursday and Friday we're going to go down to Marine Place and clean up that area. We're going to paint. We've taken down the signs here that said Highlands Fire Department here. We've taken those down. We're going to paint the building. Thursday, Friday we're going to work on Huddy Park. We're going to work on Bay Avenue, coming down Bay Avenue, and we're also going to work on Venice Park also. Those are the primary goals starting off with Thursday. We all, Mayor, if I could say two other things, we have the community service workers coming for Monday, so they'll be here to give us some additional manpower. And per conversation with Carla Braswell, there may be an opportunity to utilize some Navy manpower next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There's a ship docking at Earl, and they have made it known that they'd like to go out and do community projects for towns. So I'm kind of working on Tim Hill and myself to come up with some projects where we see these sailors come in and take care of it for us, i.e. the ball fields, again, the parks, some other areas that we're looking at. So we're excited about that opportunity. So we see a bunch of sailors in town. That's what it's all about.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Next report would be public safety.
Very good. October 1st, 2009, Highlands Police Department executed a search warrant and seized a 2006 Land Rover from a 28-year-old Florida resident. The owner was arrested and charged with possession of a controlled dangerous substance and possession with the intent to distribute a controlled dangerous substance. Officers confiscated a total of 731 pills in that investigation. Believed to be oxycodone and Xanax from the vehicle. After officers Ruth and Siegel developed information in regard to the distribution. The street value of the narcotics is believed to be approximately $20,000. October 4, 2009, officers were summoned to the Saddlewood Trailer Park. As a result of an investigation, Alfonso Lopez, 43, was arrested and charged with two counts of aggravated assault and possession of a weapon in reference to a stabbing. Bail was set at $61,000. Mr. Lopez was transported to Monmouth County Correctional Institute. The 5th Annual Highlands Cares Breast Cancer Walk, hosted by the Lenny T. Abbott Memorial Foundation in cooperation with the Highlands Police Department, will be held on Saturday, October 24th. All donations will benefit the American Cancer Society. Total calls for service, 524. Total arrests for the month, 26.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the chief? Okay, next would be building and housing.
Mr. Murphy, give me a report. Did 43 COs, took in $3,655, two mercantile inspections. He issued 31 summonses. That's all he pretty much has on the list, as well as assisting with the October 12th.
October 12th.
Bruce, do you want to talk about the substandard housing, you or Billy?
Huh?
We'll do substandard housing?
I could mention a couple of things.
Okay.
In conjunction with Mr. McNamara, our attorney, who's working these sub-housing issues, we've identified two residents in town that were in the process of going forward with demolition. And there's going to be a hearing next month. And as a result of that hearing, we hope to proceed forward with the demolition of those two houses. So we are moving forward.
Are those hearings in our court? Or
they will be.
Okay.
And we continue the maintenance issues. The borough is moving forward with some of these sub-houses that have overgrown grass, trash, debris. We're going in there and taking care of it and then charging the appropriate individual for that work that we do, and if they don't pay, we're putting a lien against their property. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks to the new code enforcement ordinance. Right?
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Anything else on building and housing?
Nope.
Parks and Recreation.
Okay, Mr. Hill gave me a report I'll just kind of go over. Fall soccer is underway. That's a cooperative program with Atlantic Highlands. Right now there's 20 teams and 265 kids participating. The bike helmet distribution program is still going, so just contact the community center if anybody needs a bike helmet. If his plans for winter programs are going to include adult